Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @RightStream and hashtag #RightStream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Just Believe Radio on the Right Stream Network. I am your host, Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, intuitive counselor, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I also am the radio show host on the Right Stream Network, for this show called Just Believe, and also a co-host on the show Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. My show airs, Just Believe airs every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss airs at 7 p.m. on Fridays, Friday evenings. So every Sunday we do something pretty interesting, I think. We have experts from the fields of spirituality, holistic health, metaphysics, the paranormal, any of that sort of thing. And what we do is we interview those people. We have a lot of psychic readings. A lot of times we do psychic reading shows. Tonight we're doing something a little different than that, which is good because I like to be able to mix it up. I know you guys love the psychic reading shows because they're fun and you get a free reading and that's fun. But there's a lot of other stuff too. Spirituality, obviously, from my other guests that I've had on over the almost couple of years that we've been doing the show. You can still call in if you have questions tonight about our topic, which is going to be the book called Steps to Salvation, which is brand new, just released. And the author of that book is Shlomo Atiya. And Shlomo, I have a bio that I want to read about him. He's not able to be on the show tonight, but he does have a representative, Daria Ann DiGiovanni, who actually is the founder of the Right Stream Network, as you all probably know, because I say that every week, and also does ghostwriting and a lot of social media work and just all kinds of things, and she can tell you more about that. But she's going to be talking about exactly the deal with this book, and it's interesting because I usually don't get a chance to read all the books of everybody that I interview because there's just, so much time. But I did read this book. I downloaded it. I read it, and I found it fascinating for a lot of different reasons, and I want to get into that with Daria when we get her on the line. I want to first let everyone know, if you do want to call in, if you do have a question for Daria, you can call in at 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. If you want to just listen, just call that number and don't do anything. If you want to ask a question, hit number one, press the number one button, and you will be connected. We'll see you in the queue with a question, and we will get to you as soon as there's an appropriate moment in the show. So, that said, let me read Shlomo Atiya's bio, and then we will bring Daria on. Born and raised in a traditional Jewish home in Tel Aviv, Israel, author Shlomo Atiya has lived and worked in South Florida since 1990 when he started his business. Although raised in a religious home, he became an atheist until a near-death experience in 2003 convinced him there is a God. However, this one God for all does not belong to any one religion. His time on the other side ultimately led to publication of this new book, Steps to Salvation, rife with history, and this fantasy novel is a vehicle for the author's concepts of how to bring salvation to the earth by improving vital industries worldwide for all people. That is Shlomo's short bio. If you want to find more out, more information out about him, there's lots of information on his website, on his Facebook page, and things like that. So we'll bring Derry on, and she can give everybody that information. And Derry, how are you?
Hey, Lisa. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well as well. How about that? All this wellness. Are you in the chat room by any chance? I didn't even look.
Yes, I am. I just said
okay,
hello
good.
To Aloha Jay. Thank you for listening.
Oh, yes. I love Aloha. So anyway, Aloha Jay, hi, from Lisa too. Anyway, I will be in the chat room when I get a chance. But I want to just give you the chance to first give out Shlomo's website, because I don't have that for some reason written down, and I know that there's a lot more information than I read about him, obviously, on his website. So anyone that wants to learn more can. What's that site?
Yeah, it's shlomoatia.wordpress.com, and I did put the link in the chat room. I'll put that in there again.
Okay.
And I will spell it out now. It's Shlomo, Shlomoatia .wordpress.com.
All right, that's nice and easy. All right, so Shlomo's book, and like I said, I did read it, and you know, there's some political stuff in it. Obviously, it's based on, you know, why don't you give a premise to the book, because you'll do it much better than I will from just reading it.
Yeah, I've kind of described it as sort of new age fantasy with a limited government kind of theme, and I want to point out that although yes, there are political figures in the book. A lot of it is really based on the study of history and what has happened in the end days, which Shlomo kind of, you know, he defines things a little bit differently than what we normally think of. But for him, the end days, kind of what we're living through right now, is when a period of time where people's animal nature, you know, we all have a soul, and we all come from the same God, and I'll get into that as well. You know, Shlomo believes that there is one God for all human souls. And right now, in the end days, unfortunately, the animal side is in control of man's spiritual nature. And so, and that has caused problems throughout history when, you've heard the expression, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And whether we're talking about a monarchy, a dictatorship, you know, centralized power in Washington, D.C., whatever it is, that is when things become harder for everyday people who are just trying to live a decent life, work, get ahead, raise their kids. And so really, it's not political. To me, it's not political in the sense of in parties. You know, it's about, you know, what happens when men or and human beings have too much power and then use that to control other people because they're allowing their spiritual side to be overruled by their animal nature. You know, they're allowing greed and the desire to control other people compel them to do things that are just not good. And I have to tell you, as the ghostwriter of this book, I learned so much more than I ever did throughout all of my schooling, which did include four-year college at Villanova University. I learned so much more about history just by doing the research for this book than I ever did in school.
It's
amazing.
I learned a lot just from reading it, honestly. I was like, you know, there'd be a true figure, either from history or even from the present, politically or, up to and including Steven Spielberg is mentioned in this book. And so there's a wide range. It's not all political people. But I found that, you know, there'd be somebody, I'd be like, who is that? You know, I'm forgetting obviously something about you know history in high school because I'm not remembering who this is. So really, you do learn a lot, and you learn a lot about I learned a lot about what truly went on with that person during their lifetime and how it has affected the world. You know, today, and I mean, this goes back to how far back did it go? It was Thomas Jefferson, I believe, was in there. Was Thomas Jefferson?
Yeah, we mentioned Benjamin Franklin. We want to go back even further. I mean, during Nathan Rothschild's discussion of money in step one, we go back to the Roman emperors. I mean, we really get into we go back pretty far back into history.
Right, and that's what's so interesting. That's what I liked about it, because to me, it was interesting that, you know, you go back so many, all these years, and how the world's been affected by the actions of one person with power, mm-hmm. you know, and exactly. I found that really fascinating.
Exactly. And the book is also a vehicle, like you mentioned this in your intro for Shlomo. Just to fill in a little bit more about him, Shlomo's an engineer who builds prototypes for small businesses, and he owns his own commercial installation and repair appliance company in South Florida. And, I mean, he's just a really smart guy. I mean, I've learned just from this whole project, which ended up taking us about almost 4 years. I mean, some of that was my fault. Some of it was on his end. You know, life kind of gets in the way. Different things happen. And so we went through a lot of stops and starts along the way. But, I mean, throughout the whole process, I learned so much from him and so much from doing my research. And, you know, what he defined salvation as, not how we traditionally tend to think about salvation, you know, more in like religious or spiritual terms where, you know, like, for example, in Christianity, well, you live a good life and you go to church and, you know, and you're saved, believe in Jesus, you live the best life you can, and then you go to heaven, you know, and that's your salvation. Well, for him, while he does believe in heaven because he did take a trip there, and we could talk about that in a minute,
right?
For him, it's really about bringing, quote-unquote, salvation to earth when man learns to put his spiritual nature in control of his animal nature, and we make reforms to various industries and basically limit political power, you know, limit powerful yeah. people. Not just, you know, we're talking about lawyers, we're talking about the justice
yeah.
system. It's not,
you know, and I think I did it a little bit of disservice by saying that, to me, there was a lot of politics to it. I don't mean politics to mean just politicians. You know, to me, it's political,
yeah.
politically based, because of the effect it's had on the world, you know,
exactly.
You know, on the workings of the world, which I, you know, the way the world works to me is political, and there's a lot of political,
mm-hmm.
you know, crap going on. And so, and, you know, and so much of it spiritually for me was right on the mark, because, I mean, you know me well enough to know my spiritual beliefs. And I got to tell you, the whole one, you know, one God thing, that's what I've always believed. I've always believed there's, you know, we as human beings, and I've said this to you 1,000 times and to my listeners 1,000 times, but I truly believe that God did not mean for religions to be separated. I think that God created the universe, and we created religion. As human beings, we created religion, and that we broke us up into these sections, and then all of a sudden we're segmented from each other, and we're fighting wars and killing each other over the difference in our beliefs, which is just insane. It's just one of those things that just, it will never make sense to me, you know? But that's what, I mean, that's right on board, really. I mean, he doesn't say it like that exactly in the book, but he's basically right on where I'm at, you know, spiritually. What I've always believed, and I really enjoy, because my beliefs come from a just knowing, you know, just knowing things, and I don't know why I just know things. But to get that confirmation from somebody who actually had a near-death experience and actually crossed over, and they come back and say, hey, there's one God, you're all religions, and I'm just like, wow. See, you know, it makes you feel good, you know, it makes you feel good to know that, wow, maybe I'm not completely crazy, you know, maybe
yeah,
there is something,
exactly.
there is something to this, you know, so I
yeah,
really
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, exactly, and the funny thing is, you know,
yeah.
And Shlomo and I—we've talked about this before, and I know when he listens to this, or you know, he'll agree. But he, you know, he felt very strongly at one point, and I can tell the story of how we met, that I was the right person to write this book. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that, but probably one of the biggest ones was even though, you know, I'm, as you know, you and I have had these conversations many times on the air. You know, I'm a born and raised Catholic, went all through Catholic school, but I got into, my mom started getting me the Daily Word like back in the '90s, and.
Right.
From Unity Church, and I really, and then after I moved to Florida, I got into going to Unity Church, and it's basically very, very similar to the one God religion that he describes in
right.
Steps to Salvation. And so it's kind of cool because I could relate to so much of that. I mean, I was already open to that whole concept, and so, you know, that made that part of writing the book a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet it did. I mean, to me, you know, I'm obviously we've Gary and I are friends besides co-workers and co-conspirators and all kinds of other co-things, co-hosts and
remain off the air.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so we've had many, many conversations on and off the air about, you know, our different beliefs and our upbringing and, you know, what it's led us to believe. And one of the things we both are very attached to is the Unity Church concept. I personally don't attend church. I mean, that's a thing for me. It's not something I feel like I can worship God from wherever I am. I can be thankful and be grateful and I don't need to go to a building to do that. I can do that from wherever I am. So I've never really gotten attached to church. But people that do, I mean, there's a lot of people that get a lot out of church, and I'm all for that, you know, all in. But the Unity thing, my parents first introduced me to back when they first moved to Florida. Again, Florida is like the Unity capital of the world or something, because everybody that I talk to that's really into Unity, a lot of it started from Florida. And you know, my dad was just, we're going down there. My grandmother's turning 100, and we're going to go visit. And have a big party. Obviously, you don't turn 100 every day, so we're going to go fly down there and have a big party. My family my dad's like, "Will you come to Unity Church with us?" I'm like, "Hell yeah!" I'm like, absolutely, I'd love to. You know, because I love the concept, and that's kind of a similar concept to where we're at with the book. But let's get to the basics of the book, or I'll just ramble on forever. Because this is like for me, when I read the first, when I read the foreword to the book, honest to God, I was hooked. Because I'm like, oh my God, this is exactly what I believe, where I'm at with, you know, spiritually speaking. So, first of all, the whole thing started from a motorcycle accident in 2003 that Shlomo was involved in. Can you give us details about that?
Yes, and I hope that I do this justice. Obviously, you know, when he comes on your show at another time, he'll be able to fill in more detail than me, but I'll kind of give you the general story about what happened. You know, it was a rainy night. I believe it was August of 2003, so gosh, we're coming up on 11 years already because we're already into the month of August. And, you know, he was riding his motorcycle. I believe it was a rainy night in Hollywood, Florida, you know, just south of Fort Lauderdale, and he got hit by a very large truck that, you know, didn't see him. And got thrown, I don't know how many feet, but he got thrown off his bike and you know, slammed into the ground. And then the guy didn't realize, I think the driver thought he went one way and so drove the other way, but he actually ended up running him over again. So it was needless to say, he was in really bad shape when they got him to the hospital. I mean, really bad. And, his, you know, they called, you know, they contacted his family in Israel. His mom and his sister came over. I mean, they, you know, they really thought. I mean, he was pronounced clinically dead. I mean, he had all kinds of internal injuries. He lost part of his brain. So, you know, in essence, he suffered a traumatic brain injury as well. And at one point in the hospital, they were unhooking him from the machines because they just figured he was, you know, he was gone. And so as they were unhooking him, one of the nurses decided to check his pulse again and said, "Hey, wait a minute, no, he's still alive. We need to hook him back up again." And so while all that was going on, and I know it's a longer story, and Shlomo, if you're listening, you can fill in more details, you know, when you come back on Lisa's show. But, you know, while all that was going on, his soul actually traveled to the other side. And it was, you know, to hear him tell it, he didn't realize where he was at first. I mean, everything was white. He was everybody he saw around him was white. He thought he was in a hospital at first, and he could see the injuries of his body. If he looked at himself, and he could see other people's injuries, you know, other souls that were there, but he felt inexplicably just light and great. Like, you know, he said, I never felt so good in my life. It's kind of like what you hear from different stories you've read of people who've had these experiences. They all say that they feel fantastic. But yet
right.
He could see that his body was completely mangled, and he was thinking, you know, this is really weird. And then before he knew it, he found himself kind of before what he calls the council. And he's also described them as three angels, three sort of beings of light who greeted him by name as if they had just seen him, like 5 minutes before. You know,
right.
They're just like, "Oh, hey, Shlomo, you know, you're back." And
right.
He was very confused. And then they started telling him about how, you know, well, you can stay if you want, but, you know, we recommend that you go back and finish your work. And at this point, he still didn't realize where he was. And he said, "Work? You know, like, you need to get to work on fixing my body. How am I going to work when my body is completely destroyed here, you know? And they said, no, well, we recommend that you go back and finish your work. And it finally dawned on him really where he was. And he's like, oh, my gosh, I'm on the other side. And so he kind of struck a deal with them because he said, you know, look, I'm the kind of guy, I always finish my work. And he is he's one of the hardest working people I know. Very hard worker, very industrious, a lot of integrity. I mean, his customers love him. And that's one of the reasons why he's so busy all the time. But, you know, he said to them, you know, if you send me back in that body, you know, that mangled body, I'm not going to be able to get back to work. I'm just going to be work for other people.
Yeah.
So they said to him, you know, so that was his concern. And they said, you know what, Shlomo, if you agree to go back, we'll make sure that you're 95% back to normal. And he said, you know what, okay, that's good. I'll take 95%. As long as I'm 95%, I can go back and do my work. But he didn't really quite know what it was. But he agreed to go back.
Yeah.
And so he ends up making this miraculous recovery. And I know it's a more detailed story with one of the doctors who insisted he have this test done again. And when he went and had the test done again, there was nothing there. In other words, like the angels had healed him the way they said they would. And so, you know, for somebody who wasn't even expected to function again, I believe it was 18 months and he was, you know, back to walking, back to working, doing all the things they never said he would. So he really shocked the medical community there.
Yeah, I'll say. I mean, it was pretty amazing to, you know, to hear the whole story. When, you know, when I was reading the book, I was stunned that anybody that majorly damaged physically, a body physically damaged, could do that to you. So, you know, I thought that was really interesting, but. This experience that he had, he obviously got well again and is pretty much 100%, almost 100%, I guess, today. And he did his experiences come from, okay, did the beliefs that he talked about in the book, the beliefs that he lives, you know, the way he lives his life, did those come from this experience exclusively? I mean, you know, he says he had become an atheist and all of that. Was it that it came from this experience because he was given knowledge that he didn't have before? Or did he come back and then just have constant epiphanies where you're just like, you know, this is now the right way? Or was he given information from somebody or something?
Well, it was more like while he was there and kind of observing and looking around, he realized that there was no religion. You know, he saw Muslims, he saw Christians, he saw Jews, he saw other people, and he just, it was sort of like a knowing that just while he was on the other side. Just kind of like this awareness, and these three beings, the council, you know, just kind of being in their presence, really, it kind of solidified for him, you know, one, there really is a God, and that this God does not belong to any one religion, and I think that's when it occurred to him, you know, wow, you know, religion's really causing a lot of problems on Earth, and it's ridiculous. Oh, and then the other thing, Lisa, you know, you mentioned, it was so funny when you said, you know, when your dad asked you if you wanted to go to Unity, and you're like, hell yeah. Well, you said the word hell, and that reminded me, because this is a very important concept that I think is blowing a lot of people's minds as I get feedback from readers of the book who are very traditional religiously, that, you know, Shlomo is very adamant that there is no hell, that this life, when we're in a body, when we're a soul in a body and we have an incarnation on Earth, that is hell. The other side is heaven.
I've always agreed to that same concept has always rang true for me too. And I'm getting a little feedback. Do you hear that too?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Hopefully the listeners aren't hearing the feedback, and hopefully it goes away really soon because it's annoying. See, it's getting worse, I think.
Yeah,
but anyway,
that's
the story there.
That?
Yeah. So tell me that. I mean, obviously, he believes in this one God for all people concept, which I love. One way he makes that point in this book is calling it the race unity experiment. Can you tell us what that's about?
Sure, and that really ties in with the whole concept of the one God religion, which is what he calls it in the book, and basically, again, that's the concept of one God for all. And kind of to make that point, and you know, there's a lot of heavy serious themes in the book and a lot of good information that makes people think. But part of what Shlomo, he wanted to have a little bit of fun with it too. So the race unity experiment ties in with the one God religion because we start out, the book starts out and we're in the future now. I mean, there's been an Armageddon war. We've had the end days. There's been an Armageddon war. We've had 12 world leaders who went to the other side. Basically, that's how we incorporated Shlomo's near-death experience into the book. We had 12 world leaders have that same experience after being in a terrorist attack at a meeting. And they were basically sort of given, we can talk about this later, but, they were given their instructions as to how to bring salvation to earth by Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, and a cast of assorted, what we call advanced souls in the book, people who had lived on earth, who had made contributions. And so that all happened already by the time the book opens. And so we're into the year 2412. And really what the race unity experiment is after the Armageddon War of 2012, we have what's called an Armageddon Commission. And they round up descendants. And this is another controversial point of the book, by the way. They round up descendants of the world's biggest evildoers. So like Adolf Hitler, for example, Joseph Stalin, who murdered millions of people, Mao Zedong, another genocidal maniac dictator, Charles Manson, serial killer. All these evil people, if you were a descendant of any of these people, and there's several of them, I mean, there's like too many to name, right now, but you basically have this Armageddon Commission and basically it's 500 families, really, descendants. And again, like I said, this is where some readers have an issue with the book, but one, it's a plot device that, it was the only way we could make the book work, and two, Shlomo, this is what he really believes that this was the right way to do it. You were basically sent to Arusha, Africa, and to participate in the race unity experiment. Now, this was not a prison. I mean, they're sent to a walled neighborhood in Africa. The reason Shlomo chose Africa, by the way, is because it's probably, of all the continents of the earth, it's got the most resources of anybody. Unfortunately, people are starving because we have bad people in control. But that was the reason why we selected Africa. And so they go to Arusha. And they're in this walled neighborhood. They have all the same modern conveniences that everybody else has. So again, it's not a prison, but the whole concept of atonement comes in here, and really understanding. And it's that whole concept of, if we don't learn from history, we're doomed to repeat it. And so these people are sent there to kind of atone for think about what their ancestors did, sort of atone for those crimes over a period of years. And where the race thing comes in is that over 400 years, if you're living, you could be lily white, and if you move to Africa, over time, your family, the lineage is going to, your skin eventually, of the family lineage, is eventually going to be black. So that's right. This is what happens. So, we open the book, and we've got students in this classroom now, 17, 18-year-olds who are trying to pass the Steps to Salvation exam and admit to what their ancestors did so that they can graduate. And we've got characters like Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin and George W. Bush and all kinds of people who are described as having very dark skin because 400 years have passed. And the point of that, again, is that there really isn't race for human beings. We may look different on the outside physically, but we all come from the same God because we're all souls having a human experience.
Right. I really like the part of the being in the school, that whole platform of being in school and there being a professor, a teacher, I don't remember what he was called, but who basically, he basically was, giving them these verbal questions and he's, one person at a time going through these people. And that's basically how you're introduced to this group. And, and there is this person had to take on their ancestor's name. And this is, I think it took place in 2412, right?
Well, yeah, 24. Yes, and we're in the year 2412 in the future.
2412. Yeah. Okay, so it's 2412, and Adolf Hitler, his great, 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 God only knows how many greats, grandchild is sitting there in the room, basically still feeling guilt, and still be. I don't know if it's guilt or just shame for what his ancestor did, and then you've got this different group of people who affected the world in different ways. And that's why, that's why I corrected myself on saying political, because there are some people in the book, people in the book like Steven Spielberg, that he's not a politician. He's a filmmaker, but his films have changed the world in some ways. You know, they've changed morality. Things have changed because of them. And so it's really interesting that, you know, so many people, and a lot of them are political, and I think that's just because politicians have a way of, I don't know, how do I put this nicely, of influencing the future more than the average person does. You know, and
I think that's
what that's about.
Not for the better.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's always for the better. But so he defines salvation, and we hit on this a little bit earlier. Shlomo defines salvation differently than most people. He says that instead of being it being a heavenly reward for being good while on earth, he defines salvation as making this earthly life function more like heaven.
Yes.
So. He has a lot of ideas for improving industries such as energy and money and medicine, and that's talked about in step two of the book.
It's kind of like in both. And what happens is in step one, we're 400 years into the future, so these ideas have been implemented. But actually, I should back up. In the year 2012. This is kind of interesting when you think about what's going on right now in the Middle East. But in the year 2012, in Shlomo's book, Israel has become kind of isolated from the rest of the world because they said, you know what, we're tired of the jihad. We're sick of people being blown up on buses. We're cracking down. You know, you want to die, fine. You know, in other words, they had enough. And their prime minister did that, and it angered the rest of the world, who pretty much isolated them. So the prime minister, he's a fictional prime minister in the book. His name is Eyal Grad. He's like, fine, okay, we're isolated. So not only did we stop, that's great, we stopped the jihad, but now I want to make domestic improvements to my country. So really in the year 2012, Israel made most of the advances that Shlomo talks about in the book. And one of them is the citizens' lottery system. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But just to kind of further the plot along so people kind of understand, when there's this explosion at the G20 summit where all these 12 world leaders are, Eyal Grad shows up, even though he's not really supposed to because, again, his country's been isolated, the rest of the world's not real happy with them, but he shows up anyway, and then there's this terrorist attack, and his soul ends up on the other side with 11 other world leaders, and they meet Moses, who we call God's project manager. It's kind of like Moses was the architect of the Exodus out of Egypt in the Bible. And now he's God's project manager again, but this time it's from heaven, so not while in physical form. And so Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad really represent the three major religions, which is, you know, and they were chosen for a reason, obviously. They're the three major religions, and we focused in on those. And so Shlomo, we kind of have a representative of each one, basically, at this meeting. And so, yes, A.L. Grad, his soul, basically, during their time on the other side, he's called upon repeatedly to talk about different changes, improvements that he's made in Israel, and one of them is the citizens' lottery system. And this is actually a really workable concept, I think, and I really hope...
I thought so, too, when I was reading it. I was like, wow, this is kind of good.
Yeah,
cool. That might work.
It really is. It would be, like, for example, in our country, it would be started, you know, each state would start it, and Shlomo, you know, he's hoping that that'll be the case in Florida, obviously, because he lives there, you know, and that would be the place for him to make his mark with that. But just to let your listeners know how it would work, I mean, it's kind of cool. It's like, you know, we're not replacing the existing lottery system. You know, as he and I were collaborating, I said to him, you know, we don't want to say that we're taking something away because it's supposed to be about freedom and giving people more choices. So let's just leave the regular lottery system in place. But now we have the citizens' lottery system in addition to that. And this is basically a system that rewards good behavior and hard work. So in order to participate, you've got to have 5 consecutive years clean. Like, you can't have any crimes. I mean, yeah, we understand. People are human, so we all do stupid things. You might have a misdemeanor or a crime in your record. But once 5 years have passed and you've made up for that, or if you've never had a record, then you can participate in the citizens' lottery system. And the way we have it set up in the book is it's $50. You get one ticket. It's $50 a week, and you can only play once, you know, once a week, one ticket. And I won't get into, like, how they drill down the numbers and you know, get into the nuts and bolts of it. But basically, it creates 30 millionaires per week, the way that it works. And now that money does come. And, again, you don't have to participate in this lottery. You know, there's still the other lottery system. But if you participate in this particular lottery and you win, your winnings are kind of, you know, there's some restrictions with them. In other words, you don't get the money in a lump sum. You would get like a debit card, you know, you'd have access to your money. But you would be required certain things, like if you don't have a house, you would be required to purchase one with the lottery money. And, you know, you would be required to use vendors that are on the lottery website. And preferably, you know, if you live in Florida, for example, and you want to hire a painter to paint your house, if you're going to use your lottery money to do that, now this is just the lottery money. This isn't money you make from your job or anywhere else. But if you're going to use the CLS money, Citizens Lottery System money, then you need to choose from somebody. You know, they want you to choose locally. The whole idea is to get money circulating locally. And what this lottery system does is it helps, like, good business owners, people who have integrity, who do good work, who have a good reputation, who hire, you know, that care about their employees. You know, it's all about reputation and Salvation Time. Those are the vendors that will show up on an approved list with this lottery system. And so, you know, if you can't find a painter in your town of Florida, then you can look within the county. If you can't find one within the county, you can look within the state. If not within the state, then at least within the United States of America. And so, and this is how the lottery system would work in every country. And again, the whole concept is to keep money circulating locally in local communities and basically rewarding good business owners, rewarding people who are living good lives and contributing to other people. And it's just a great way. I think it's just a great concept to help money circulate more freely and give people more freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And since I've mentioned Steven Spielberg several times, because it was just funny to, I don't know, when his name came up after hearing some of the other names, like, you know, in order, you know, and how they come up in the book, I kind of giggled. I'm like, okay, what did he do? I was like, what did he do so bad? And then, you know, it's not about necessarily bad. It's just the influence it had. And I know, like, what Shlomo's talking about and is the concept of positive cinema and the best of human nature being celebrated in film. And I'm wondering a couple of things. How did Steven Spielberg take the hit? how was it all on him, first of all? And also, why was Schindler's List? Why was Schindler's List specifically mentioned?
Well, like we say in the book, and Shlomo believes that Spielberg kind of whitewashes evil. He gets into a little bit of too much moral relativism in his movies, where it's kind of like, yeah, these were bad guys, but, you know, and making excuses. And I'm speaking for Shlomo right now. And that's the thing, as a ghostwriter, not necessarily every, you know, for me, as long as I'm like 80 to 85% on board with a client and what they're trying to do, I'm great. And he and I happen to be about 90 to 95% in agreement on things. But, you know, there were like differences. Honestly, Schindler's List kind of in Shlomo's mind was not really, you know, it wasn't portraying the extent of the atrocities accurately. And, you know, and I know Spielberg has another movie that we didn't even mention in the book called Munich, and I believe it was kind of the same thing, like trying to make excuses for terrorism, for example, and just sort of trying to draw like moral equivalence where, you know, he's got a very strong sense of, you know, this is, you know, good and bad, you know, right and wrong. And so
right. He
just felt Spielberg was kind of too much whitewashing the bad guys and trying to just make too many excuses for what they were doing. And so
right. That's
where that comes in. And we had a little bit of fun with that. And also, you know, I guess because it's a contemporary, like you said, wow, you kind of like perked up and you're like, oh, Spielberg, you know, it's kind of like a way to,
I don't want to say
shock readers, you know.
It's fascinating to go from Adolf Hitler to Steven Spielberg. I mean, how do you not be like, wait, what? How that happened?
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely a definite catch in the book that makes you think, you know.
Absolutely. And film can be used for propaganda. I mean, Stalin, we bring that point out with Joseph Stalin. I mean, all the propaganda films, you know, where he was supposedly leading all these, you know, his peasants, you know, into a new age of era of prosperity when, no, he starved them to death. He took away their farm equipment. It made it impossible for them to make a living. But, please don't get me wrong, I'm not comparing Steven Spielberg to Hitler or Stalin. I'm saying that I guess there's different degrees of evil, different degrees of wrongdoing, let's say. So not every character is like, you know, totally off the charts in terms of the bad stuff that they've done. I'll put it that way. Manson, definitely. He's another one that's, you know, he's off the charts.
And Manson in the book then has to, the character in the book, the descendant of Charles Manson, basically his role is to explain how basically a new prison system it works now in post-salvation time, right?
Yeah, and Lisa, you know what was very interesting about that? I mean, I remember in our collaboration, and Shlomo was saying, you know, I need a character that's going to represent my ideas for justice. And just off the top of my head, without knowing anything other than the obvious, I said, well, how about Charles Manson? He was a pretty sick guy, you know, he killed a lot of people. And he was like, yeah, let's go with Charles Manson. I did not know that half of it, though, that I would, when I actually did the research and watched several documentaries about him, all the things that I was able to tie into it. And one of the important points that fit right in with Shlomo's concept was that, let me just back up for a moment. Shlomo believes that God sends about, 10% of the soul. And of course, and you know this, we kind of, our souls make an agreement with God before we come into a body. This is going to be my life situation. I'm going to be male or female. I'm going to have this kind of family. I'm going to live in this country. You know, you choose the circumstances of your life. And obviously different things happen along the way, and we have free will, but you kind of choose, like, your overall lifetime, basically. And so, you know, that's certainly the case with Manson. But one of the things that Shlomo believes is that, you know, sometimes there are people who just can't handle life on the outside, and it would be better for them to have the choice to stay in prison even after they come up for parole.
Absolutely.
Rather than slide back into a life of crime. And
right.
In the case of Charles Manson, I did not know this until I watched these documentaries, but by the time he was 35, he spent like the half of his life in jail for armed robberies and all kinds of crimes. I don't think he had actually murdered anyone at that point, but he was in a prison called Terminal Island in L.A. He was 35 years old, and his parole came up, and he begged them to let him stay. It was like he knew he couldn't handle life on the outside, and they were just like, no, you know, you're done. Your time is up, and it's time for you to leave. And from there, he ended up in San Francisco at the Haight Ashbury and got into all kinds of hallucinogenic drugs that he wasn't into before. I mean, he was into other kinds of drugs, but, you know, then he got into acid and all this other stuff and the free sex and everything that was going on there. And that was the beginning of the Manson family. And so that just tied in nicely. I didn't know that about him at the time when I suggested him, but it tied in nicely with Shlomo's whole concept of, look, if you feel like you need to stay and you can't handle life on the outside, then you can make a life within the prison system. And it's productive.
That's what was so cool. I think that a lot of times what I've seen and you know, just from you know, hearing different people's stories, sometimes somebody gets let out of jail, and they've been in jail so long, they just don't know how to exist. They don't know how to take care of themselves anymore because they've been cared for, you know, it's certainly not like you're, you know, going to a spa or anything, but you're being cared for by someone else, group of people for so long, you actually don't know how to take care of yourself. So a lot of them end up purposely committing another crime just to get back in, you know, just to get back in because they're forced out. And, you know, whether or not Charles Manson, I think that Charles Manson has so much evil in him, I'm not really sure that he would recognize it as being something that, okay, I don't want to hurt anybody else, so let me stay in prison. I think it might have been more of, I don't know how to cope. I don't know how to take care of myself anymore, so let me stay in prison.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. I think there's something evil.
Yeah, well, he was writing song lyrics, and he got into Scientology while he was in that prison, too. I forgot to mention that. And, you know, so, yeah, I'm not saying, like, in his particular case that his intention was pure, but he did want to stay, and that was an interesting – I found that an interesting point because
– I didn't know that, by the way, and I'd actually watched documentaries on him, and I did not know that part. I was very surprised when I read that.
Yeah, oh, me too. Oh, my God. And please, I had nightmares for days after watching it, but it was – important. And you know, the other thing, so yeah, I mean, and you know, I'm sure you read this part in the book when the student Manson is giving his answer, you know, he does not make excuses for his ancestor. Nobody's making excuses for any horrible things that any human being has done on there, certainly not Manson. He does, however, fill in his life story, which I also learned from watching the documentaries about how, you know, his mother, he came from a 16-year-old unwed mother, and she didn't want him, and she was a prostitute, and so he had a very tough life. And that also was where we were highlighting the idea of reincarnation again. And the character in the novel says, look, I'm not making excuses for him. I'm just saying, you know, his life was a little bit more complicated than anybody realized. And yeah, he would have done better if he had just stayed in prison his whole life. And all these people would still be alive. Or, you know, they would have lived. They wouldn't have been murdered.
Right.
So, one other point I just want to make, too, about the prison system, too, is basically, though, you know, taxpayers foot the bill for this. And I know it's not a spa, but, I mean, you know, people who committed these horrible crimes are, at least, you know, they're taken care of, and they don't have to worry about anything. In Shlomo's idea for reform, listen, you know, you stay there. If you commit a crime, especially murder, rape, I mean, you're done. You're there, like, you're staying. Like, for certain crimes come with a lifetime sentence. But within that, you can choose. So you can choose to be productive. And so basically, these prisons become a way for energy to be produced cheaply for the surrounding communities. When there's a hurricane, let's just say it's Florida. Again, I'll just use that as an example. Florida has a hurricane. The prison system restores the power. They generate power just any time, anyway. They produce food, and so the price of food becomes cheap. So it's not about, you know, and it's also about, you know, let's say you stole a lot of money from somebody, and that's why you're in prison. Well, you're going to repay that person, and you get paid at a much lower wage than like another person who's working as a farmer on the outside world would. But you stay there until you make restitution to that family. You pay that person back if you've stolen from them. And if you choose not to work, you'll still get fed, but your food's going to be horrible, and you're going to live on a tent on the prison ground. You're not going to have the same benefits that working prisoners get. And I like those ideas. I think he's right on the mark with that.
Yeah, I really did too. That was something that I really, you know, because I've always had a problem with the prison system and the way it works, and law enforcement, and God, I could go on and on. There's a lot of issues I have with a lot of that, and I thought that was nicely covered in the book. If you want to just sleep all day and be a loser, that's fine. But you're really going to get bread and water. That's it. You know,
yep.
The traditional prison idea. You're not going to have you know the same privileges that people up to and including basically conjugal visits. I mean, that was even part of it. Like once a month they had a conjugal visit. I mean, that's a great motivation to work. I mean, not just that, but the good food and the, you know, living indoors, not just the sex. I'm not talking about just the sex, but you know, it's a motivator.
Lisa, I'm glad you brought that up because that's another important point. You know, Shlomo, we bring this out in the book that God, and I think it's Oliver Cromwell in step two, the advanced his soul, that says, you know, God endows human beings with certain natural urges, and we've made accommodations for that. So in this case, but on Earth, and this isn't, you know, there's a problem with prostitution. And so in Shlomo's concept, since every prison system has what we call a sin city, and these prostitutes are in business for themselves. They are sole proprietors. They're not owned by pimps who end up murdering them and beating them up and doing all kinds of horrible things to them. They're like the owners of their own little business, and they're relegated to the sin city area, which is connected to the prison. And to me, that I like that because it keeps the family neighborhood, you know, away, you know, they keep them free of all that stuff. So if you're raising kids, you don't have to worry about them seeing a prostitute on the street.
Right.
But it does make accommodations for, there are people who just can't control their animal urges, or, you know, maybe they're not married or they don't have a girlfriend or boyfriend. You know, then they can go to a sin city and it's very discreet, and the prostitutes can function without worrying about being murdered by their pimp.
Right. Yeah, there were so many things, and it's so hard. There's no way to hit on all the subjects in this book that are interesting and of importance. I mean, for people to just see the other side. And you know what? The whole idea of some people are going to be offended by this or some people aren't going to agree with that. Hello, that's what the world's about. I mean, you know, if you don't want to have anybody else's opinion, don't ever read another book, because bottom line is nobody is, you know, we're not clones of each other. We all have our different belief systems and our different, ways of thinking. And that's what makes the world a great place. That's what, well, you know, makes it a more of an interesting place for sure. It makes us enjoy our relationships and things like that. Where, you know, it would be pretty boring if we all agreed with each other on everything. But, you know,
right.
but this is one of those things, if you're not open, if you completely believe, and I know this isn't a great way to sell a book, but if you don't believe, if you're not open to other ideas than what you truly believe in, don't read the book. You know, I mean, one of the things that happened to me was, you know, I had somebody leave a one-star review on Amazon, and you know about this, but, you know, saying that, you know, I was delusional for believing in angels. The book was about angels. Why would you read a book about angels when you don't believe in angels and then leave a bad review? You know, so it's kind of the same thing. You have to be open-minded, even if you don't necessarily believe in, and there's no way, I mean, there's no way you're going to agree with absolutely everything in this book. But that's part of the whole purpose of the book, I think, is to make us think, you know, to make us think outside the box a little bit. You know, but people, my thing is people leaving these, you know, saying bad things and making it a big controversy. This is one man's experience and one man's belief system and one man's opinion, and a lot of people are going to agree with it, and a few people are going to disagree, and they're the ones that are going to be, you know, saying things, you know, negative things about the book. It's not a negative book. As a metaphysician, as a, you know, a person who's been practicing spirituality my whole life, I was not offended by anything in this book. I was fascinated. It was stuff I had not thought of. I mean, solutions to problems that I hadn't thought of at all. There's nothing that's going to offend you unless. I mean, there's just nothing that's going to offend you. There's no one unless. There's nothing that you could possibly be offended by. It's just someone else's opinion, and it's an interesting opinion. It's an interesting book.
Well, thank you for saying that. You know, and I have to say that I did, in the back of the book, there's a resources section, and there are like 50 sources that I used. So, I mean, people can, and I put the websites in there because people can go to those sites and they can look it up themselves or go to other sites and look up the information. You know, I did a tremendous amount of research for this book, and so, yeah, it is going to stretch your mind. I mean, I just had somebody on Twitter who really liked the book, and he said to me, I'm still thinking about my review because it really challenged a lot of my belief systems. And I wrote back on Twitter, and I go, see, that's good because it makes you think. I mean, you may not change your mind about certain things, but at least you learned something that someone else has experienced. You know, the challenge for me with marketing the book in terms of, you know, talking about people being offended is that people that kind of buy into the whole Shlomo spirituality, are, you know, what we believe, may not be, they're going to be offended by some of the historical things, the political things, and then conversely, the people who are going to be on board with a lot of his ideas are going to be like, oh no, you know, like they're going to be locked into their traditional religious beliefs. So it's kind of, you know, it's an interesting thing, and me, you know, not to talk about me, but I mean, in my whole growth journey, I mean, one of the things I found fascinating about this book was going through the history of money with the character of Nathan Rothschild. And, you know, I used to think, you know, once upon a time, I thought people who were into, like, let's end the Federal Reserve and bankers and all this, I thought that these people were, like, out of their minds. And then I do start doing the research, and I'm like, wow, they have a point. We're going all the way back to, talk about a biblical story, you know, the story of Jesus throwing the money lenders, or really money traders, out of the temple. I mean, everyone assumes that it was just because, you know, he was mad because, you know, money doesn't belong in God's house, but really it goes a lot deeper than that. And the source for this was a documentary called The Money Masters by William Still, and I recommend that everybody look it up. It's called The Money Masters. You can find it online. It's a three-hour documentary, fascinating. But in that film, he points out that what was happening at that time, if you understand the political situation at that point in time, the time of Jesus, that people in control, the elite, Jewish religious leaders and the Roman elite together were making it impossible for everyday Jews to pay their temple tax with what's called what was known as the half shekel of the sanctuary. And for a devout Jew, the half shekel of the sanctuary was the only coin that God would accept because it was the only one that didn't have an image of a Roman emperor, which was to them was pagan. So the people at the top, and these were including some of the Jewish religious leaders, and let's remember that Jesus fought with the Pharisees and the Sadducees all the time, and the Romans together were making life hard for everyday people who just wanted to abide by their religious beliefs and pay their temple tax, but they were driving up the cost of this half shekel. So that's really what ticked him off and why he was, you know, waving around whips and throwing people, throwing them out of the temple. I mean, to me, that was a fascinating. I did not know. I never learned that in school. I mean, we studied about Jesus in Catholic school.
Right.
Never learned that.
There was, like I said in the opening, there was a lot in this book I learned because I honestly didn't. I don't ever remember learning some of it, and some of it I might have slept through. I don't know, but there was a lot not only from Sunday school, you know, religiously speaking, but from history class and social studies and all of that. I was like, wow, I don't remember anything about this.
Yeah, I had a lot of those moments along the way when I was doing the research and studying for the book. So.
Yeah, and that's really an interesting part of it. But tell me too about there was one thing that I was fascinated by was the Dome of the Rock that was in Jerusalem, and it was destroyed in the Armageddon War, it was replaced by a temple, I believe. Can you tell us about that part?
Temple.
What was it?
It's replaced with a replica of the ancient, what was known as the King Herod Temple. You know, we read about that, I guess, in the Old Testament and the Torah, certainly in the Torah. That Dome of the Rock has been a source of contention for centuries. And, you know, Shlomo said this to me, and of course, you know, not being from Israel or from the Middle East, you know, I could understand why it would be so controversial, but I think the impact that it was making, I mean, his, you know, friends of his and people that saw the book cover were just like, oh, my gosh, people are going to go nuts when they see this.
Right.
You know, they destroy this book, and then what they do is they build, and they come in with helicopters, and that's another fulfillment of Scripture where it comes from above where this temple is rebuilt. And so the way we put that into the story was, you know, they came with, they demolished it, and then these helicopters come in, and they start putting the structure in place and I did my research. I found this really cool video online, which was like a virtual tour of the ancient King Herod Temple. And thank God for that video because it walked you through the whole thing and it had, it had like words on the video as you're watching the screen and these words were flashing and it would describe different rooms. And so it made it a heck of a lot easier for me to describe in the book what this temple looks like, and that is the image that you see on the book cover. That's the ancient King Herod Temple. So that's been replaced, and that becomes the Temple Mount of the One God religion and Steps to Salvation.
Very cool. Yeah, I thought that part was really interesting too, and how the cover of the book was related to that story. All right. Now, one of the things that I found really interesting, too, another of the things I found really interesting, too, was the amount of attention in the book that Sarah Palin got. And as Secretary of State. Now, can you talk about that a little bit? She was part of what they called the Salvation 12. And I, can you explain that to everyone a little bit?
Sure. Well, Shlomo is very big on energy. Energy is another huge concept in the book.
Right.
And how to extract heat from the earth without building nuclear power plants. And so he was pretty adamant that Nikola Tesla, who was another person I really didn't know all that much about. It was a good person who really got kind of, for lack of a better word, screwed over by Thomas Edison. I'll just say that people can, you know, but that's, you can look him up. We talk about him on the blog. But I said to Shlomo, wait, if we're going to talk about energy and we need a contemporary person, then I want to bring Sarah Palin into the book. In my opinion, you know, talk about propaganda. So much of the mainstream coverage of her has been absolutely wrong. There's been no focus on her accomplishments. And again, there are websites in the back of the book that people can go to discover her real record and what she really did and how she was also a reformer. She put members of her own party in jail for corruption when she was governor. And so we wanted somebody like that. That was the and the energy thing, because I said to him, you know, I really think her having a conversation with Tesla about energy just makes sense because that's been like, you know, a big focus of her tenure in politics. And she was oil and gas. Before she was governor, she was on the Oil and Gas Commission, and that was when she was a whistleblower. She saw a lot of corruption from members of her own party, And she resigned in protest. And eventually, this governor was able to prove that these people were corrupt, and a lot of them went to jail. But anyway, that was really why. And I just couldn't figure out, you know, obviously the year is 2012, and it certainly would not make sense for her to be a member of the current administration, but I had to come up with a way to make it happen. So, yeah, it does stretch sort of the bounds of fiction. But in the year 2012, there's so much outrage over what happened in Benghazi and the embassy that, you know, Hillary Clinton resigns, and there's all this public pressure to put Palin in the position. And I guess, to me, it kind of makes sense because she's also a very staunch supporter of Israel. So in the book, Israel's isolated. So it's kind of, again, it's definitely a stretch. I know it's a stretch, but it's fiction. I thought, well, it would kind of make sense for her to want to go and show her support and just show the world that there's at least one prominent American, you know, that supports Israel and their crackdown on the jihad. So that's where she comes in. And so when after the explosion, you know, she's at the G20 meeting, and she and Eyal Garot, or Prime Minister Eyal Garot of Israel, are about to have a conversation when the terrorist attack happens, and they end up on the other side. And
right.
So much of the time on the other side, really, obviously Eyal Garot is kind of like the main character, Sarah Palin. And then also we have, I would say he's more of a minor character, but Ibrahim Ahmed of Saudi Arabia, because that also is kind of tied in with the whole energy thing. And again, sort of like the three major religions, because you have sort of Palin kind of representing Christianity as a Christian woman, Eyal Garot, obviously the Jewish prime minister from Israel, and then Ibrahim Ahmed, who is a Muslim from Saudi Arabia. So again, it was kind of like another way to sort of tie in the three major religions with like three living people and make them sort of like the main focus of the afterlife and all the interactions, although really Garot has the most interaction with the advanced souls, I would say, of anybody. But yeah, so that was where we brought her into the story.
Why does Shlomo choose Moses as God's project manager? I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, Moses, you know, in the Old Testament, was the one responsible for kind of bringing the Jewish people out of the slavery of Egypt and into the Promised Land. And so, in Shlomo's mind, this time around, Moses would be bringing, you know, quote unquote, salvation against salvation on earth to all people, not just the Jewish people. So that's kind of where that came in. Plus, he's one of the most, you know, revered figures in Judaism. And, you know, so, and, you know, this is the leader, the man who brought the Ten Commandments from God. And that's another reason, too, because Shlomo, in the book, we have the 12 Commandments. So we wanted Moses to be the one who's bringing the case.
I love the 12 Commandments. And you know what? When I was reading the book, I was using iBook, and the stupid program crashed, and I had highlighted all these things that I wanted to talk about, and I had to reinstall it, so I lost all my highlights, which was really irritating. But the 12 Commandments was, I remember one of the things, I highlighted the whole thing because I was just like, wow, that is just, I mean, really interesting new take on what's important, you know, what's most important. And some of the commandments are still the same, you know, from the Ten Commandments. But things have definitely been modernized, I guess, you know, with this, mm-hmm. with 12.
Yeah. And it just so happens I have the book in front of me. I have them in front of me.
Oh, you have
them?
Really, oh, good.
Yeah. And the first commandment is very similar to, you know, the first commandment and the original Ten Commandments. Basically says, I am the one God of all creation, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Jacob, Moses, David, Solomon, Jesus, and Muhammad. Do not commit to other gods.
Jerry, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
All right. Sorry. No, not well, I can now, but I couldn't for a couple minutes. I don't know if it was just me, though. So continue. It may have just been me.
So basically, well, I don't know how much you've heard, but he's basically saying it's very similar to the first one. I am the one God of all creation, but we specifically name, you know, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Jacob, Moses, David, Solomon, Jesus, and Muhammad. Do not commit to other gods because it will only bring lying, confusion, and trouble. And so that you know, it's I would say it's more of an elaboration of the original first of the Ten Commandments.
Right.
And then it gets into, and a lot of the stuff, Lisa, is a lot of the things that you and I kind of, you know, have been studying and following for a long time. I mean, about how, you know, the second one, do not lie, because when you lie, it comes back to you. You're basically lying to yourself. Well, I mean, that happens to be the truth. It's, you know, common sense, I think.
I think that's, yeah.
you know, the third one, do not steal, because when you steal, you're stealing from yourself, and you really are. You know, and one of the things Shlomo said, and I forgot to mention this about his experience on the other side, you know, before he met with the angels, he was kind of disoriented and trying to figure out what was going on. He did see his life flash before him, and he's told me on many occasions that he had the worst pain in his stomach. And he's like, it's worse than the worst stomach ache you can imagine. After I had to look at some of the stuff that I, and not that he did horrendous, horrible things, you know, like some of the characters in the book, but, you know, you're shown some of the things you did that were just not so good. Maybe you lost your temper with somebody, or you hollered at someone you shouldn't have yelled at, or you cut somebody off. Whatever it is, you see all of that, and it really bothers you. So I think, you know, with numbers 2 and 3 about lying and stealing, I think that was a lot of motivation for those. Number 4, very similar to the one, the original Ten Commandments, the fourth one is honor your father and mother. But I actually like what Shlomo did with the new version of that. It says honor your father and mother as long as they are respectful and positive. Remember, you have chosen your parents for a reason, to learn lessons while on earth. If they're bad people, do not follow their example. Instead, be a good person in spite of them. And that ties in with the whole reincarnation.
Right. I actually thought that one was interesting because so many people have tough childhoods and make something of themselves in spite of that bad childhood. So I actually really thought that was a good one.
Yeah, I like that one. So I think that's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Number 5, do not especially in my name. Do not murder, especially in my name. This is God speaking. You may kill animals for food, but you must not kill them indiscriminately. And I like that too. You know, I like meat. I like chicken. I mean, I'm not a vegetarian, but I also don't believe in just killing animals just for no reason. Just, you know, because it's sick mind. It's fun. Yeah. Do not use violence against any creation of God. This includes humans, animals, and trees. That's number 6. Number 7, do not rape. And I like that he spelled it out. I think, you know, in the original ones, and maybe it's lost in translation, but, you know, there's do not covet your neighbor's goods, do not covet your neighbor's wife, it's about adultery. But I actually like that Shlomo, it's pretty clear, do not rape.
Right.
You know, that's it. I mean, pretty clear.
Yeah,
absolutely. I like number 8, too, and I think this is such a problem. I think now, because we're living in a time when people are so focused on, you know, what they look like, and they're looking at wrinkles in the mirror and who's having Botox and plastic surgery. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying those things are bad. I'm just saying that I think people get way too obsessed with it. Number 8, do not be jealous of anyone. Jealousy is a poison that will kill your soul. God bestows every human being with his or her own talents and gifts, so there's no need for it. Instead, use your time on earth to discover who you really are. When you do that, jealousy disappears.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. I like that one. That was probably my favorite out of all of them. You know, although, you know, I liked the other one we were just talking about, you know, so much too. But, I mean, like I said, to me it was modernized. You know, commandments modernized to the world we live in now, and what we've learned, you know, now based on what they knew in biblical times. We didn't have Botox and, you know, and plastic surgery, and, you know, you didn't just go and you didn't go and buy new boobs. You got boobs, you didn't like them. Guess what? Too bad. You know, you got boobs.
And
There's so much like different now, you know, it's so different that I actually like that one because I think that made it to me that made it more about, you know, don't be jealous of what other people have. Don't feel bad. Focus on what you do have. That to me was about gratitude. And that's a lot of what I like to teach and talk about.
Definitely, absolutely, but being thankful for what you have and then using those God-given gifts to create your own life. Like, you know, in other words, focus on your own gifts, just like you said, be grateful for them and use them to honor God, like to honor your creator, because everybody's here for their own purpose, and that's a reminder of that. So, hey, I wasn't blessed with singing talent in this life, but, you know, that doesn't mean I can't appreciate someone else who has a great singing voice without being jealous, but saying, wow, that person really has a gift that they're using to bless the world. And that's really the attitude that that we all need to have. I absolutely agree with you on that. Number nine, and this gets back to allowing your spiritual nature to control your animal nature. He says, do not let your physical body control your soul. Do not let your animal nature triumph over your spiritual nature. Let your God soul control your animal soul, and your life will improve.
Yeah, I like that one. Yeah, that one's a good one.
And then we have a couple more, so here, I'll just continue on if you don't mind.
No, go ahead. Yeah, I love. I mean, I was gonna mention them anyway. I just didn't have the highlight anymore.
Okay, we're up to number 10, and it's be generous, good, humble, sensitive, understanding, loving, non-judgmental, and open to everyone and everything around you. When you project positivity will come back to you tenfold. To me, that's sort of like the law of attraction, number 10.
Exactly.
Basically,
yep.
Seeing it in a different way.
Absolutely. Agreed.
And then number 11, this is a good one too. Remember that you are undergoing a test. This life is a test. It may appear to be long, but it's actually very short, so produce the very best actions from within. The more positive actions you take, the more positive results you'll experience. And again, I mean, not test in the sense that it necessarily has to be hard, but again, Shlomo, you know, getting back to the reincarnation concept, people choose more difficult lives. Like you were talking about, you know, these poor kids who grew up in these horribly abusive homes, and you think,
right.
Oh my gosh, if you believe in reincarnation, why would you ever want to, you know, be brought up with a mother and father who are beating you up every day? But that soul chose that lifetime for a reason, to advance in their spiritual growth. So that's kind of what number 11 is a reminder of, that whole concept that, you know, you choose a hard life, you choose to be homeless, you choose to be maybe physically unattractive, you choose abusive parents, and you learn how to rise above that, your soul elevates to the next level when you go back to the other side.
Right.
So that's what number 11 is all about. And then the last one, use the power of God, which is positive. This reminded me very much of Unity, what I've learned at Unity. Use the power of God, which is positive imagination, to drive your life in a positive direction. So it's that God energy, that God equip. You know, Unity Church talks a lot about being co-creators with God, and that's last commandment is another way of expressing that same concept.
I think that's true. I think that makes sense. It's interesting because, I mean, you know, you're obviously not going to fit these on a little rock and chisel them in like most of them. But you know, they're just, you know, we also don't have to. We have other ways of doing this now. So, but they're really good. They're really interesting, and I think they really talk about. To me, it was a really great way of understanding what this whole Salvation Times thing was about the fact that, you know, these kind of were the highlights to everything. To me, it was like an overall, hey, this is what this book talks about, only in a heck of a lot more detail, obviously, but still. And that's how I want to kind of, you know, since we're running out of time, I want to ask you a question I would ask him, and so I'm going to rephrase it. What do you think, and what do you know? I mean, you were the ghostwriter for this book. What do you believe that Shlomo wanted the readers to really learn and understand and take away from Steps to Salvation?
Well, I think at the very top of his list, there are many things, and I hope that when he listens to this, he'll think I did him justice, but I know at the top of his list is that there is no death. He really feels very strongly, and we're working on getting him into some of the, you know, senior communities throughout South Florida as a speaker. You know, people who are elderly who are going to be facing death fairly soon, he really wants them to understand that, you know, there is no death, there is no hell. He believes that religion instills a lot of fear in people about death.
Absolutely.
And even when you think about it,
that's crazy.
Yeah, and it's like when you think about it, Lisa, it's like if you really had to be as good as we're taught you have to be to get into heaven, who would get into heaven? Probably nobody. I don't know anyone who would.
I wouldn't. And I think I've done pretty well. You know, I've lived my life pretty well, but I have not followed all those, you know, all the the 10 or the 12 of those commandments. So if
we're here to screw up the nerves.
If there was a checklist up, sorry, you know, I'd get to a certain one in a certain order and I'd be tossed out, you know. I totally am on board with that. I think that's a really great concept and a really great thing. And I love the idea of him doing that, talking to people, because I feel like elderly people, some of them get to a point of peace and they've accepted that they're going to, you know, they're not going to live that much longer, but some of them are scared to death. So the idea of somebody talking to them who's already experienced it, I love that idea. I mean, our elderly should be such a big focus, you know, for all of us. And making them comfortable and making their last years learning from them and making their last years so memorable and all of that. And they shouldn't be spent in fear, you know, fearing something that we know darn well you don't have to fear. So I love that idea. I'm glad he's thinking about doing something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Me too. And, you know, and then the whole thing of hell, you know, that just, you know, that there is no hell. You get to come back. You can come back again, you know. There's many things, but I know for sure that he feels really strongly about that. I guess the other thing is, too, the whole concept, and this, again, is also related, that salvation is something we create on Earth. Now, Shlomo understands that we are all humans, that when our soul inhabits a body, we're imperfect. And again, we've chosen our circumstances. We're here to learn lessons. That's how our souls advance. However, we can make this life on Earth function a heck of a lot closer to heaven than it does now. And, you know, and so when people read the book, and this is one of the challenges for me as a writer, especially in step one, when there's so much information to get across, and it's basically a dialogue back and forth, is to keep it funny and keep it interesting, but still get the points across. I think another major thing that Shlomo would like people to understand is that we have to learn from history. That's why there's so much history in the book. And, you know, because, again, if we don't learn from history, we're just going to keep repeating it. We're going to keep making the same old mistakes. His ultimate goal, I would say, just in terms of the influence that this book could have, I mean, really, his belief is that every country should function with the least amount of government as possible. Again, he's not an anarchist. Yes, we need government. We need a structure. But limited, so that individuals can basically fulfill their own God-given purpose, and life would be so good in their own country, they don't want to go anywhere else. So, you know, again, so it's worldwide. He wants people everywhere to experience the freedom to pursue their dreams, to raise their families if they want, and if they're raising families, or to basically live out their purpose without people who are letting their animal nature control them and in turn impose that control on other people. So, I mean, I think if we're looking like bigger picture, that's his ultimate goal, which, I would like to see that happen on Earth. I really would.
Yeah.
I hope that maybe I'll see that in one of my next incarnations.
I think those are great. I mean, the book does have a lot of humor in it. Adolf Hitler has a problem. He has to constantly pee when he gets nervous. Hello, that's hysterical. There's all kinds of funny little things going on with the students, the stinky guy, and the, you know, there's just a lot going on. And if you want to learn about Adolf Hitler's ancestors' pee problem, you'll have to read the book.
And we made him like a sensitive artist type, so the complete opposite of, you know, the real thing.
Exactly.
And I enjoyed our little love triangle between Eva Braun and Joseph Stalin and Hitler. Shlomo will tell you, like, when he talks to you. I mean, we had a lot of fun along the way, too. I mean, he would mention something like, why don't we do this? And we would both just be hysterical. I'm like, that's really good.
There were things, because you know what? You're picking up a spiritual book, and that's one of the things, you know, when I wrote my book, I'm like, I want people to laugh. I want people to get that, you know, that I'm just like a normal person and not some kind of freak. I want there to be humor in this. And that was so important to me. And so, you know, but when you pick up a spiritual book, you don't expect to laugh a lot, you know, you expect it to be very serious. And I love that there's some humor in there. So tell everybody, because we've got to wrap it up, obviously, but tell everyone how they can find out more about Shlomo, Atiya, and how they can buy the book, because the book is available for sale right now.
Yes, yes it is. I would encourage everyone to please go to Shlomo's blog, and that's shlomoatiyah.wordpress.com. His name is spelled S like Sam, H L like Larry, O M like Mary, O A T T I A .wordpress.com. Because when you go to his blog, and we set it up so that he explains a lot of these concepts that are in the book. We have little excerpts from the book in there and in various blog posts to kind of, you know, fill in the blanks a little bit for people. You can also find links to where to purchase it from his website. And you can also find links to his Twitter and his Facebook page, which is Shlomo Atiyah Author on Facebook and at Shlomo Atiyah on Twitter. It's available right now on Amazon.com. Right now it's only available on Amazon on paperback. However, the Kindle version will be available very soon. It finally passed the formatting test, the formatting procedures, and it'll be available on like iBooks and iTunes and pretty much every Barnes & Noble online, pretty much everywhere books are sold online, you'll be able to find it. It is also available, as you know, Lisa, as an e-reader on Lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com.
Right. And that's where I bought it because I just happen to be one of those technology freaks that have to read my books now. My daughter's completely opposite. My 19-year-old daughter, she tells me, she keeps ordering all these Amazon packages, keep coming. I'm like, what are you buying? She's like, books. Books. I'm like, why don't you just buy a Kindle? You could have saved yourself a fortune. And she's like, I like having the hard book. I like having the book. I like the smell of the book. I like the feel of reading a book. And me, I'm the complete opposite. I've had enough of books. Just give it to me in an e-format. So that's what I did, was download it from Lulu. And I really, like I said, I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I laughed. And I prayed a lot that a lot of these things will actually happen, and these are changes that we'll truly see, at least some of them, maybe not in our lifetimes, but maybe in our children's lifetime, that we'll see these changes actually happen, and hopefully not through an Armageddon experience, but you know, who knows?
Right.
So
yeah.
Thank you so much.
I mean, I really appreciate that you read the book and enjoyed it and gave your honest feedback. I mean, it was such a pleasure to do this interview because, you know, having read the book, it made it such a really interesting discussion.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you for that.
Absolutely. And this is something, you know, I mean, you'd sent me a copy of the book before it was even really, really formatted, I think, or maybe when it was first done. I don't remember. But, you know, just to get my – and I didn't have time to read it. So, you know, this was really important for me to get it read by tonight and, you know, for this interview. And I really did enjoy it. I really learned a lot. And spiritually speaking, I think it has a lot to teach you. Historically speaking, it has a lot to teach you. You know, there's so much to it. And, it's you know, it's the opinion – that it's an opinion of someone who you're either going to agree with or partially agree with. I don't think there's any way anybody can read it and be like, this is completely crazy. I mean, there are just things in it that make so much sense. So I really did enjoy it, and I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about the book, Steps to Salvation by Shlomo Atiyah, and thank you again for that.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa. Great show.
All right.
I really enjoyed it. See you next week at your call screener.
yes. Call screening next week for psychic readings, everyone. All right. Thanks a lot, Daria. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everyone, that was Daria DiGiovanni, and she was talking to us about Shlomo Atiyah's book, Steps to Salvation. Really great book. I recommend everyone go out and get a copy of it or download it from Lulu.com. You'll be able to get it on Amazon. I would think, since it's past the formatting process, I would imagine it would be this week, that it would be this upcoming week that it would be available, knowing the way Amazon works. So I don't think it'll be long. But if you can still get it in PDF format and open it in whatever e-reader you happen to have, if you go there. And if you're like my daughter, my 19-year-old daughter, and you want a hard copy, well, they're all over the place. So you can get that pretty much anywhere books are sold, and definitely on Amazon.com. So everyone, that's it for tonight on Just Believe. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check out my website at lisatarves.com, LASATARVES.com. You'll find links to my Facebook pages, my Twitter account, my LinkedIn account, and plus links to where you can buy my book, Just Believe. Until next week, when we will have a psychic reader back on the air, thanks everyone for listening, and have a fantastic week to come. Thanks a lot. Bye.